will be discussing the two passages I read on pages 155 to 156 and 202 of The Love Life. So far, we have been looking at the many ways in which family is treated in the novels we have read, and what binds people together in this unit. I would like to look at these passages in the context of the analysis of The Love Life proposed by some of the reviews we have read, specifically their ideas about the treatment of race, ethnicity, and biological heritage in the novel. Several critics have called The Love Life a post-multicultural novel, arguing that ethnic boundaries no longer apply to her characters, and further that Jen's novel proves that family is made and does not depend at all on biological parentage or ethnic ancestry. I agree that this is Jen's ideal for family, but the book actually presents a much more complex portrait of reality, and I would argue challenges the notion that race, physical appearance, or biological heritage can ever be overcome, even in open multi-families in an open multi-society, or that we might even ever want to. Jen explores the myriad of ways that family bonding occurs, including recognition of the physically similar and familiar. At the end of the novel, we learn that Carnegie was actually himself adopted, and Lan is the biological daughter of Mama Wong. Here, the characters' former notions of definitive real parentage and bloodlines are proved fictional. We also learn that there are many versions of every story, and as Mama Wong declares, only an American boy would read something and think, oh, that must be true, as if true is that simple. We understand that the Wongs are a family created out of love and common experience, and this trumps blood or biological family inheritance, and that there is not one true, correct format for either a story or a family. Still, I am uncomfortable with, for example, one critic's assertion that this means race no longer matters at the end of the novel. Jen pays loving attention to the characters' physical appearances and to family similarity. Blondie says in the first passage, Bailey had my light hair, and for a while my blue eyes, things that somehow mattered more. He was left-handed like my father. Blondie struggles to assert that she loves all her children the same. She considers herself superior to any sort of racial boundary drawing. After all, she married an Asian man and adopted two Asian girls. Still, she cannot help her feelings about Bailey, and here I find it hard to blame her for them. She has a natural desire to see her family attributes replicated. That Bailey looks like a Bailey is reassuring to her. It is not just a racial issue here. She doesn't want Bailey to look like her because she thinks blonde is better, but because she wants to recognize herself in her son. Carnegie simultaneously is worried about his own genes disappearing in Bailey's appearance. While those around Carnegie call Bailey the future, Carnegie also sees the disappearing past. One critic suggests that Carnegie's efforts to find himself through his culture and genealogy prove futile when he discovers that he himself is adopted. Still, race and heritage remain a powerful source of identification for the characters and Carnegie. Like Blondie, does want his son to look like him. I do not feel certain myself about Jen's vision of cultural and ethnic identity, but I feel that it deserves a more complex hearing than some of the critics have given it. We see very little racism from outside of the family in the novel. There are rude comments and mean school children and a few incidents in rural Maine. But more often we find the characters struggling with internalized notions of their own identity and their place in the family. In the chat between Blondie and Gabriella, Blondie is horrified at how deeply her husband and children identify and communicate with Lan, though at first Blondie is the only one who speaks Chinese. The girls in Carnegie gravitate towards Lan, and she welcomes them. Blondie tells Gabriella that despite Carnegie's insistence, our family will always be our family. She sees that the girls are no longer quite mine. Wendy says, Lan is like us. She just is. I can't explain it. Lan understands everything. Even if you don't tell her, she can read our minds. A similar understanding occurs between Lan and Carnegie. Is this racially based understanding, or is it Lan's special gift? Are the girls pleased to encounter an independent female Asian role model in their mostly white community, and to find that she understands their problems more easily than their rosy white mother? How much is appearance and race actually a part of people's identification with each other in the novel, and how much of it is an identification of common experience in a racist society? I think these ideas are more ambiguous than the critics suggest. Jen's novel is about how there are no one-story answers. There is not one truth. So I find it hard to believe she is taking such a one-sided stance on the meaning of race and ethnic heritage. I don't believe that this does credit to Jen's very nuanced novel. But I'm not quite sure myself what's going on, as I said, so I'd like to discuss these issues tomorrow. And I'm sure it'll be a very interesting seminar. See you later.